tsunami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 447 of the Toonami Escape Podcast. I'm C. Kohler. With me tonight is Seda.
Hello.
And Crocodile.
Salutations.
So we've got a very short episode this week. We decided to do this just because we didn't want to have too much stuff to talk about next week because Daima is going to be ending.
Yeah, so next week we'll have to do the ranking of Daima, right?
I think we should.
And I was wondering if we were going to have to do like a re-ranking of Blue Exorcist.
I don't know. What do you think?
No, but now we know we're not going to because, well, now we know. We didn't know, but now we do know. This is a segue into the news.
I bring to the news real fast? Okay. Because, yeah, I'm not saying should wait till it's all over, but I guess the segue's here now, so.
Yeah. So I'll go ahead and introduce the news. We were wondering in the previous weeks, what is the lineup going to look like? Because, you know, Daima's ending, Down to Dawn ended, Blue Exorcist is reaching its season finale. And now we know that we have the lineup for November 8th. The November 1st lineup, we know that's next week, is Daima's finale, two episodes of Blue Exorcist, and then One Piece, right?
Bleach too.
The week after, Bleach at the top. Then we have Blue Exorcist Beyond the Snow Saga. So that's the season 4. We're going straight into it. We were wondering if that was going to be the case, and it is. And then guess what's back? Our good friend MASH.
Yeah, Crocodile called it last week. Yeah.
I mean, it made sense. So.
And then One Piece.
I mean, I could not imagine them just getting one season and not the other. Like, obviously some things are out of their control, but just seemed like a logical conclusion or the most likely choice.
But we no longer are doing double Blue Exorcist, though. Not that I expected it, but we're doing double Blue Exorcist. We did it last week. We're doing it to wrap up the season, and then it's just one Blue Exorcist,
yeah,
which is fine.
Yeah, I think bringing in Mashal season 2 is good. I mean, it's not the show I wanted. I'd rather it had been Dr. Stone, but I'm fine with this. And at least we're not going to write on fumes for the next 2 months. We've got a new premiere.
Yeah, I was half expecting it. Like, we do the Uzumaki marathon, and then we do like a Don to Don marathon, and then we'd show Fully Coolly Progressive for no reason or something, you know? Like,
right.
But we're not getting that. So this could have been worse. Getting a new show, Blue Exorcist, maybe not the best show in the world, but we can continue through it, you know, no stopping, keep this train going.
Yeah, I think thinking back on season one, it was like, obviously not like amazing show that I want to go back and rewatch, but I had a good time with it. Just kind of its tongue in cheek nature and being goofy. I welcome the comedy, so I'm cool with that. Although I hear that the show does take itself a little seriously in season two. So
I do think for the most part, Blue Exorcist has gotten better over time. So that's its credit. And I guess we'll see. So Beyond the Snow, it's like two parts, like one core each. And then this, once this is done, just all the Blue Exorcist that's been animated, basically?
I think so.
Yeah, I don't know how many cores are in the snow arc because there's one more named arc after this. I don't know if the snow is two cores or one, but there's one more called like the Blue Knight or something like that.
So it's weird how this is how Wikipedia does it. So season 3, which is the season that we just are just wrapping up, that's the Shimane Illuminati saga, is 12 episodes. Now, season 4, all of season 4, all of season 4 is 24 episodes. So it's two sets of 12, but they call it all of season 4. Why that distinction? I'm not sure. Maybe it has to do with the production. But the first 12 episodes of season 4 are Beyond the Snow. Then the second 12 episodes, still season 4 technically, I guess, is called The Blue Knight. So that's all one season. So I assume that means we get all of it if it kind of comes like that.
I think so, most likely.
Okay, so about 24 episodes of Blue Exorcist left, basically.
Yes, 24 episodes. So if we keep it, you know, assuming we are going just straight through it all, that'll last us until the middle of next year, basically. So
Having you talk out that whole bit about the season four being two arcs, I don't think that's like, that's unusual, but I get it now, having you heard you say that. It is strange they didn't have a four and five, but it's not a big deal. I get it. It's just two arcs. So,
yeah.
But yeah, Mashal season two is the big news this week. Along with that, we also got an actual promo pretty early on, even though it's a couple weeks away before it shows up. But a great promo, by the way. I thought the promo was really well made.
So what I gather from this promo, as well as like the reaction and thread about it, is that the opening theme is a banger. And they used it in the promo.
Yeah, I would say opening of Mashal will be competing, or for Mashal season two, that opening will be competing with the opening for Dandadan, and they're both by the same music group.
Both great openings, because the Mashal season two opening came out first, and then when the Dandadan season one opening came out, people were like, oh, they did what worked in the Mashal opening and then redid it. I will say too that the Mashal opening is also really good looking too. It's got great animation and style to it as well. It's not just the music, great music, but it's kind of the whole package. It's a great opening. I kind of really honestly am kind of tempering my expectations to think that the opening is probably going to be better than the season, but I'm going to give the season the benefit of the doubt. But I mean, I've heard so many good things about this opening. I think it won like, you know, several awards for being like amazing. So. But yeah, the promo was really good. I think they'd had really good pacing. They showed some funny sequences. Like you said, they mix in the super hype opening into the actual promo with the music. Somebody brought up a good question in the thread, and it's like, do you think they'll do what they did with Dandadan and show the whole opening every week? And I don't know. This one's pretty good, and it's the same artist, so maybe we'll have to find out and see.
Yeah, that'd be kind of interesting because Daima was getting its opening cut. Bleach's opening is cut, and it'd be weird for Mashal being like the third show, because it's going to be Bleach, Blue Exorcist, and then Mashal. So normally the third show doesn't keep its opening. Sometimes the second show does, but maybe they'll give us an exception here.
I think it'll probably depend on the licensor. Like Dandadan kept opening all the time, no matter where it's in the block. Like even the rerun slot, it kept it opening. So I really thought it's going to be depending on the licensor and what they send to Toonami as the tapes or the masters or whatever.
Yeah, and don't hold me to this, but I feel like I remember hearing a comment from DeMarco once that was something to that effect, that always decide that I think they ask for the episodes from the distributors to be a certain length. And if the distributor decides to do it in such a way that they don't cut the opening, then that's what they get. So I have a feeling it might be more up to them than it is up to Toonami. I'm assuming Mashal is not the same as Dandadan.
In the sense, same sense of what?
Same provider.
Oh, no. I think Dandadan is G-Kids, right? And I think Mashal is Viz?
I think that seems right.
Yeah, and if that's the case, I wouldn't get your hopes up. Obviously, they'll probably do the show at first runtime, hopefully. I mean, sometimes they've not been doing that even, but...
Oh, Mashal is Aniplex.
Oh, Aniplex?
Okay.
Oh, wait, really? Sorry. It's licensed by Aniplex. Oh, wait, the manga is Viz, the anime is Aniplex. Okay.
Huh, I didn't know it was Aniplex. That's interesting.
Well, at the very least, the people at Toonami understood an assignment. We'll see if
Aniplex... Oh, yeah. That was going to be my other point, too, is that the fact that they included the opening in the promo makes me feel like, oh, if they do have any sway over whether they're going to show the full opening, that might be an indicator, but we don't know yet, so we'll see. Kind of fun to think about. The last thing I'll talk about Mashal, too, I mean, we'll talk about more, obviously, when the show gets here, but the main premise appears to be of season two is that, as we learned at the end of season one, Mashal has been outed as a muggle, basically. And so the season seems to be focusing on that, which I think will be fun. So
I guess the Divine Luminary arc exam or whatever. So it's going to be a test arc, as we've come to expect from our shonen.
So this is the tuning exam of MASH, basically. Interesting. Okay. Well, like we alluded to, there are only two premiere episodes this week, so this is going to be a short episode. And so let's go ahead and get on to it with the first episode, which is Dragon Ball Daima. Dragon Ball Daima, episode 19, Betrayal, the penultimate episode. I'll go ahead and give my quick rundown. Glorio wishes the Z Fighters back to normal. So this was no big surprise. I'm assuming everyone saw this coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious what he was going to do there.
I'm shocked. I thought they were going to stay kids forever, and there's going to be like a series of DBZ baby spinoffs.
Yeah, exactly. Once they're big, Goku's ready to fight again, but Vegeta's like, no, it's my turn. So, and Goku's like, all right, fine. And Vegeta decides to take over fighting Goma. There's a brief moment where Arinsu and Glorio kind of have their words, and she's disappointed that Glorio didn't do her bidding, and she ends up firing Glorio. However, she's very, even though she's kind of upset, she's somewhat amicable about it. I don't know.
Yeah, she doesn't really get like angry. She's just like, you're fired. Get out of my sight. Okay.
And I guess the whole resolution to Glorio's arc, which honestly I'm going to say right now felt a little underwhelming, was just that she was giving him the opportunity to leave the third demon world and come to the first. And so that was his whole reason to like
his ass. And then this was his way to repair. And of course, he knifed her in the back at the end, though knifing her. He did the right thing, obviously, for the plot and the moral and whatnot. But yeah, he owed her, and then this is how he repaid her. And she's
yeah,
like,
but it's
well,
not even.
You.
I get that, but it's like it's not even like that big. Like I was expecting like a oh, you saved my sister's life or something, and it was not even that. It was just like I gave you a job, basically.
Well, I think it's more like she rescued him. Like he was living, I think, obviously there's no like Glorio flashback. So you can see his whole life story, like One Piece style or whatever. But I think the long short of it is that she saved him from like a life of like destitution or poverty or whatever. And so like, I think it's not just a job, but like she saved him and kind of like got him a better life or something. That's how I took it at least. But again, there's no big Glorio flashback, so we can only infer.
Yeah, even if that is true, which I kind of somewhat take it that way as well, it needed that. I think it would have worked better if we got to see more of his motivation. It's just sort of left it's not compelling enough. It's the way it was delivered. While this is happening, we're just watching Vegeta and Goma fight, and they're kind of like mildly evenly getting shots back and forth, but of course Goma is still too powerful. And then we get a quick scene where everyone thanks Glorio for doing the right thing, and I guess there was some trepidation that they thought he might backstab them, but he did the right thing. And yeah, I don't know, that's kind of it with Glorio. That's his whole end of his arc right there.
I don't think he'll be getting a nomination for best character.
No, unfortunately. He's a nice guy, but there's nothing going on there.
Yeah, cool. That was common, I think, point brought up about Daima is that some of the new characters might have been fun or whatnot, but are a little undercooked. Like, no one's going to be hankering for Glorio to be like DLC for Dragon Ball FighterZ or something like that, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, they've got double whammy going against them. They're not super compelling characters with great stories, nor are they like able to beat up Goku. So they don't have much going for them. All right. So we come back from the commercial break. Goma just isn't getting tired. No matter what Vegeta does, he's just, the third Oculus or whatever is too powerful. Then Arinsu has an idea. She's like, oh, wait, Ku, go and fetch this magic book. It's in my drawer somewhere. And he runs off to go get it. He brings it back to her, and she starts to read it, but then like Ku, who's like really smart, can read it really fast and find the specific page. And in the book, it says that if you land three very strong blows to the back of the person's head, they can defeat Goma, they can dislodge the eye, basically. Goku and Piccolo come up with a plan. Goku says, okay, I'll attack him from the front, and then you get behind him. But in order to do this, Vegeta has to stop fighting. Vegeta doesn't want to stop fighting. And this is when Bulma steps up and gives him an ultimatum.
So I saw this. This is one of the few things I saw, like, not watching the show when it came out originally in Japanese, this moment, for obvious reasons. The wording's obviously a little different in the dub, but it's basically the same idea. It's like, if you don't stop fighting, I'm no longer taking a bath with you.
Yeah. And that, like, immediately he's like, I'm done.
Yep.
Well, Vegeta knows which side his bread is buttered on, so.
Yeah. It was a pretty great moment, actually. She used her wife power to win, I think.
Yep.
I mean, to be fair, it wasn't like Vegeta was accomplishing much, right? So.
No, but that's, yeah, he would have kept going forever, too. So Goku or Piccolo are able to go in. Although Piccolo hasn't really joined yet. I think it's mostly Goku at this point. And
this is when Goku does his further beyond.
Yes.
Yeah. Thing. Again, they don't understand the assignment. The who wrote the dub script and Sean Schmail, hopefully I'm not pronouncing his name, or the ADR director. Everyone understood the assignment here.
So yeah, just to make it perfectly clear, he says literally, I need to go further, even further beyond. And that's when, of course, he breaks out the Super Saiyan 4. Again, now in adult form.
Yeah, people mention this in the thread, and I agree. Like, this would have been more impactful had he not done it, like, as a kid.
Yeah.
But it is sort of weird that they decided to do that. But
wait, the thing, though, the way it's framed, it's not like Goku so much as doing it again. It's more framed like he's doing it for the first time, and everyone's seeing it for the first time, which makes it really, really weird. Like, I noticed that when I watched this originally subbed or whatever, and I was like, maybe I I was missing something. I don't like why. It's just very weirdly framed here. It's cool, but just very weirdly framed narratively.
Yeah, they're kind of acting like the first time he did it, and it didn't matter, even though the show really made it seem like it mattered a lot.
It's almost as like they originally wrote it that this would be when the very first time he goes Super Saiyan 4. And of course, it's a big moment when he gets a new transformation. And then it's like almost like they retroactively had it also happen when he was a kid, but didn't rewrite that. I think we all agree. It was a little bit weird the way it was just kind of positioned.
And then that's pretty much where the episode ends. It's going to be the final fight, which is going to be Super Saiyan 4 Goku and Piccolo teaming up and probably, you know, obviously defeating Goma next episode, I'm assuming.
And then saying goodbye to Goryeo and Pansy, and like, we'll see you again someday.
Never, maybe. you guys are welcome to step up and talk about any particular moments or things I missed.
So the one thing I would say is that I assume you nominated earlier, like put the Goma fight on the best fights already. Like, especially that moment, I think in episode 20, but 16 or whatever, when they were doing the whole like swoop around of their first teaming up against Goma's new form. Like, the Goma fight has a lot of spectacular moments, but I think something that hurts it a little narratively, or maybe even more than a little bit, is that because of the third eye, like, nothing they do actually matters. So it's all really, really cool, but it just doesn't matter, and it kind of makes the fight drag on a little bit and makes a little what starts out as something really, really hype kind of boring. In a, I think a way, like, say that about a lot of Dragon Ball fights, but it feels worse here than a lot of other ones I've remembered that kind of stretch on for a bit. I don't know. It's just, yeah, the third eye is kind of hacks, and obviously they need to circumvent it, you know, find a different way to counteract it, which is what they're about to do. But it's like, you guys should have probably gotten on this like an episode ago or something.
I don't think we nominated it for best fight yet because we were waiting because we didn't know like how to frame it yet, because we didn't know how it was going to go. We're like, do we nominate the fight now, or do we nominate like the last part of the fight? We weren't sure. So, but that's we had talked about it, of course, because the animation, like, especially when they first started teaming up against him, was really good. You know, some of the animation, even when like Vegeta was fighting him, even though he was basically, it was futile, you know, was pretty good. I mean, sometimes really good, not always really good, but for a lot good, there are good chunks of this fight that are animated well. But yeah, we weren't sure how to frame it yet, but I do agree with you. As for the episode itself, you know, in terms of, we saw a little bit of fan service in a sense that Vegeta pulls off a final flash, and it's pretty well animated. That's one of his signature moves. So, you know, just in terms of the shonen spectacle of that, like, we see Super Saiyan 3 Vegeta pulling off his, you know, his signature move. That was like a fan fiction sort of thing prior to Daima existing, right? And now you get to see it for real. So that's fun. And it was animated well. Didn't do much, but...
Yeah, I think that the somebody in the comments or in the thread was like, Vegeta's Super Saiyan 3 looks better than Goku's. I agree. I think it's his hair standing up. It looks cooler.
Yeah, I agree. The hair isn't even so see floppy. Goku transform again at the end of this. In the sequence, he does Super Saiyan 3 again here. And you see it's easy to compare Super Saiyan 3 Goku in the same, you know, art style, animation team, all that stuff. There's no confounding factors. And I think one-to-one, I think Vegeta does look better with the form.
All right. Well, that's Daima. We got one more to go. You know, like you said, we all know what's going to come. It's going to be defeating Goma, saying farewell, going back to Earth, all that stuff. So
I guess the only thing I'm curious about, and I'm not sure if it even matters, is who takes Goma's place? Arinzu?
Oh, they answer that. But I won't say it for spoilers reasons, but they do answer that question. It's actually, I think, a good ending. But again, that gets answered. Won't it? We'll see, I suppose. We'll see.
Majin Buu.
Yeah, that would be a nightmare. Also, why doesn't Goku just go to Super Saiyan God?
This is before Super.
I know. I'm sorry. That was slash S for sarcasm.
Sorry. I'm sorry. My fault.
No. I should have led with the sarcasm. But yes, I keep thinking that. I'm just like, he can do that? No, he can't do that. Not yet.
Nope, doesn't line up.
Granted, it wouldn't have mattered because of the third Oculus. I'm sure if even he was Super Saiyan God, Super Saiyan, the third Oculus would just infant regen Goma anyway, so.
Oh, okay, I have one last thing real quick. Well, you know what? Actually, never mind. I'll save that question for the finale. So we'll just go ahead and move on to Bleach.
Okay.
Bleach, Thousand Year Blood War, Core 2, Episode 9, Marching Out the Zombies. Easy to understand title this week. Quick rundown. Uryu says, quote, "You're no good," and then leaves.
You say you're no good treacherously?
I heard this in the episode, and I was confused because it didn't sound like Uryu, and I was like, wait, what was that? And then someone mentioned that was like actually a part of like the music track.
Wait, what?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. Like, it's a remix of one of, I think, Pretris. This is a Bleach song, and it's been remixed like 500 times, and the remix is awesome. But yeah,
so
it's
it wasn't a line. It was a background music.
Well, that just changes everything then. So Uryu just leaves, doesn't say anything to them, I guess.
No, but I was also confused by that. I was like, wait, who said that? And it didn't
That's wild. I'm glad you brought that up. I did not know that.
You weren't the only one, and I wasn't the only one, because someone mentioned in a thread that they were confused. I'm like, oh, that was a music. That was just the music. It was like one of those just lines in a music background thing.
That is wild. Okay. Well, anyway, he leaves. Chad says that Uryu must have a good reason to switch sides. And Ichigo is like, well, I don't care. Either way, he's our friend, and we're going to try to help him.
Notice that Ichigo also says, no matter what happens, he's going to beat up Uryu, basically, which...
Yeah, but like in a friend's way, right?
You're my friend, and to remind you of that, I'm going to beat you up.
Yeah.
Beat you in the face.
It's a shonen way.
Beat you back into your senses, kind of typical... You know, I don't want to say typical, that sounds a little demeaning. Just, it's the standard shonen trope, right?
No, yeah. I think typical is fair. Like, that's a lot of shonen... protagonist resolve your issues. I'm going to beat the stupid end or evil or whatever out of you.
I still am not sure about what Uryu is. I kind of agree with Chad that it's probably some kind of double agent, or he's playing the long game or something, but I guess we'll see. I don't know. He is a, you know, I keep wanting to say he's a Quincy, but then, I mean, technically so is Ichigo. So I don't know.
I would say Uru is like full blooded Quincy and like culturally Quincy. Like he's a Quincy in a way that Ichigo is not. So I don't think it's a one to one comparison.
This topic about friendship, shonen friendship, just reminds me of Blue Exorcist when Shujiro or whatever his name is was like, I'm going to beat up Renzo and then I'm going to kill myself.
Yeah. Like, well, it's really such a extreme. Weird comment.
Like the most extreme version of it.
Like that Brooklyn 999 skit where it's like, I've only known this like dog for like 5 minutes, but I'm gonna, if anything happens to him, I'll kill everyone in this room and then myself.
So, yeah. So they're contemplating on what to do. Meanwhile, we cut over and we see that Renji and Baz B are going to have a fight against each other, but they keep complimenting each other at the same time. He's like, you're crazy rooster. And he's like, you call me a rooster because of my awesome hair? And then Renji's like, no, man, I think your hair is really cool. And then Baz B's like, well, I think you're cool too with those cool eyebrows. And he's like, you like my eyebrows? And it's just weird.
Yep.
And it's again, there's a bunch of characters who all kind of start merging here or getting, you know, close to this area. One of the major ones, the major one for this episode, obviously, is Giselle, who is the Z Sternritter, the one that has the ability to create the zombies. I guess I'm going to quickly mention this because it was like a line in the episode that but before that, though, I left something very important off here. And that is that along with the scientist guy showing up, what's his name?
Mayuri?
Urahara.
Oh, Urahara. Oh, the hat guy. Okay.
Well, he's not really you might have meant this. When you said scientist, I don't know if you meant Mayuri or Kisuke.
I mean Kurosuchi. Kurosuchi, okay, yeah. The guy with the glowing suit on right now.
Okay, oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, Mayuri. Yeah.
Anyway, he shows up and he has brought with him. Oh wait, I think I'm skipping ahead. I'm sorry.
Kisuke shows up before Mayuri in Chronicles.
Yeah, okay. Kisuke is Kisuke is sort of a scientist. He's not like mad scientist, but
to have Mayuri's job. He is a scientist.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So yeah, anyway, I'll come back to that. So anyway, there's some discussion about what is Giselle's gender, and we'll come back to that. But anyway, Kisuke shows up, he's like, okay, Ichigo, Chad, and Orihime are like, how are we going to get to the Soul King's palace? And Kisuke's like, oh, I've been working on that. I've been doing some research on these distortions that the bad guys use. And oh, by the way, here's Yorichi. She's here.
Finally.
And this is what she's been doing. She's been helping Kisuke out by collecting these fragments of the portals that the Sternritters use in order to examine them, basically. And he's basically coming up with a way to transport them up there using this quote-unquote technology. We'll cut back to the fight real quick, and it turns out that Bambi is back. Remember that scene earlier on when Giselle snuck up on Bambi and we were like, what's going on here? Well, this is it. Giselle took Bambi, killed Bambi, killed her, and is now controlling her as a zombie, making her fight.
So much for that dog captain Sajin guy, like pulling out all the stops literally to kind of was a waste.
Yeah.
He gets rough in this. Yeah. We're end of the fetch stick.
He does have it rough.
I get it.
Yeah. Ow. And before I go on, that's where the commercial happens. Before I go on, I will just quickly say that I am surprised how important this Giselle character has turned out to be. I thought she was going to be like a minor Bambi, but she actually ends up being kind of important, at least for this episode.
She's a fan favorite character. So like,
okay. That's cool.
Yeah, I kind of just assumed that the four Bambiettes or whatever would just be like, you know, come in as a group and knocked off as a group, but that didn't really happen.
Right. So exactly. And like Bambi would obviously be the one that's most important, but here she's just playing a subordinate role to Giselle. So that's interesting.
Yeah, and the Bambis aren't done yet, I'll just say that much, like in terms of being relevant.
Oh, okay. So we come back from the commercial break, and my note here says Bambi wants more of something. Oh, it's something to do with like Giselle.
Yeah, I think basically there's kind of like sub and dom relationship, but it's been reversed because now Bambi's a zombie and Gazelle's in control. So I forget exactly what she wants more of, but it's mostly she being a sub to Gazelle in this context. Like a massive sub, but she's like a zombie now, so.
I think she literally just to bring context to your note, I'm pretty sure literally in the dub, like the line, Bambi was just saying, I want more, and she didn't specify.
Right, but it's in, yeah, and the
it's implied.
But there's an inference there, an implied inference about it being a romantic or potentially sexual thing. And this is when Captain Kurosuchi shows up in his glittering, super bright coat, which actually leads to some pretty funny lines about, like, why are you so bright? And he's like, this guy, I just got to talk for a second. Like, I mean, I'm not super Bleach knowledgeable. This guy is the weirdest guy in the show to me. Like, he's so, like, super overconfident and cocky about himself, but he's also, like, a goof and doesn't realize it.
I like how they poke fun at how, like, bright he is and they can't see anything. And a few minutes later, someone mentions, like, hey, it's
Gazelle.
I can actually see a little bit.
He's a lot less bright.
Yeah, it's like, you're not. Yeah, and he says something. Yeah, like, yeah, I toned down my greatness.
Yeah.
I thought that was fun.
I toned down. It'd probably have been something like, I toned down the immense brightness of my intellect just so you can see me.
No, he literally said, I toned down my greatness.
My greatness, yeah.
Which is still funny.
So, before Kurosuchi has a chance to really do anything, Gazelle, or Gigi, as she's called, shows that she has backup in the form of zombies, a whole army of zombies made up of the court squad guards that have died. But Kurosuchi is like, haha, I've got my own ace up my sleeve, and he has brought with him a bunch of Aroncars, who I've never seen these characters before, but I'm sure they've been in something.
I barely remember them. Barely. Oh, yeah.
They're from beginning back. Of the Wakamundo arc, when, basically Ichigo's friends break into the Wakamundo, then beat up some easy Aroncar before facing the top 10.
I'm not going to try to describe all of them because I don't even remember them.
Yeah, some of them are also in the Power of the Fake Kurokura battle. They have flashbacks to that too. And Yamakichi even mentions him fighting one of them and so on and so forth. But yeah, they're from the Wakamundo arc, both the beginning of it and also in the fake Kurokura town part.
There's like four of them, and they're like, they each have a gimmick. They also mention that they're dead. And again, I keep struggling with this. Like, who's dead? Who's not dead? I don't know.
They're dead or dead. Their ex were dead because they're hollows.
I was gonna say
they're like already dead, but now they're extra dead and an undead. So they're undead, dead or whatever. I don't know. Fuck off. Like,
yeah, they're like, they go way out of their way in this episode to keep reminding the viewer that they are dead. These people are dead. So I'm like, okay.
No, Kuba, what are you saying?
There's one of the Aroncars is this really big, muscly guy who's very effeminate, and he ends up squaring off with Gigi. He's very fabulous, and he kind of points out to the fact that, oh, we're like the same, I guess, indicating that the same gender or something. I'm not sure.
Maybe just because they're both queer or something. I'm not really sure about that. Fabulous.
Yeah, something like that. Right. Yeah. And then Gigi, and they're just sort of having like a bit of banter back and forth.
Yeah, and like one of the other characters is like this really Spanish guy. I mean,
oh yeah,
a lot of their Spanish. For some reason,
I mean, Wikumundo is a Spanish term. Like, there's a lot of Spanish in the.
But one of the characters is like especially, yeah. Right. And then there's like a woman and another guy. I forget.
Like I picked up right away that obviously the Aroncars and Wikumundo has a very Spanish themed thing to it. But it is interesting to me that only one of these four characters actually has a very thick accent like that. The rest of them don't. So, but I get it.
So the other thing to mention, not the very end, before we get to the end of the episode.
Okay.
It is unfortunate that Yumi Chika, who is sort of a kind of a queer coded character himself, says a pretty bigoted thing. And just,
yeah,
it is what it is.
It was, have not read the manga part of the section, but from what I've seen from like episodes of it, like they actually toned it down from the manga, and it was like not super great.
Yeah, so the dub line is, you're actually a guy, aren't you? So, you know, that's not I mean, not that Yumichika is like a stellar character to begin with. That's like, oh, that's not a great line.
No, I mean, I understand they kind of wanted to make clear that Gazelle is like a transsexual woman, but there are like just better ways and less clumsy ways to do that. And we've got here, and this was less clumsy and less weird or bigoted or whatever than what was in the manga. So it's just like, Ubo's just like, I mean, I guess props on him for having like a transgender woman who's like a prominent character and like she's a fan favorite character, like people really like her. But then also this is like the shame on him for doing this too. So it's like you, he gives and takes, I guess. But
yeah, this gives me sort of like the Kamabaka Kingdom vibes from One Piece, kind of a little bit, but you know, a little bit of that where it's like,
no, I was thinking of that too.
It's not done in a like a mean-spirited way or a derogatory way, but it also is very stereotypical and maybe a little offensive, probably offensive to some people. So, but anyway, right before these two clash off, Gigi has one more surprise up her sleeve, her ace in the hole, when she summons none other than Zombie Hitsugaya. And that's where we leave the episode off. So Hitsugaya here and zombie form working for the bad guys. So he died?
No, they did say that soul reapers don't have to die. As long as they touch the blood, they can become a zombie. Right.
Yeah, her powers work easier on soul reapers than on Quincy's.
So I'm guessing that's what happened here, is he's not dead. He just got zombified because he's a soul reaper.
There's also something in the episode, correct me if I'm wrong, but something about the Iran cars cannot be controlled by her.
Because they're already dead or something, basically.
Yeah, something about them being dead so they can't be zombified, I think. I don't know.
Right. It was basically implied that because of the process in which they were brought back, and I think the fact they're already dead, that her zombification powers wouldn't work on them. Because I remember El Spaniard, I don't know why I tried to put a Spanish accent on that. I'm sorry. I speak from French and Spanish. I don't know what I'm doing there. But... yeah, they are immune, basically, so.
Yeah, so Hitsugaya, fan favorite, Soul Reaper here, is going to fight for the bad guys, I assume.
Even more kind of iconic duo than Hitsugaya and taking L's. You can't.
Again, my big takeaway from this episode, I thought it was pretty good. I enjoyed it. I think it had a lot of fun characters in it. But yeah, the big takeaway for me is that I'm just so surprised that Gazelle ended up being such an important character. I thought, like as we said earlier, I thought like her and the other three like lesser Bambis were just going to be a one and done and be forgotten. And now she's kind of like taking the lead here, which is really surprising to me.
Yeah, I agree. It's kind of fun to see, you know, one of the characters get a, you know, a fun power and making some, you know... Apparently we brought back she brought up the fourth great ninja war with all these zombies. We have a big zombie fight.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else about this episode that we didn't talk about that's worth mentioning? Any other cool moments or anything?
No, I don't think so, but I agree with you. Just a lot of fun moments, like with Mayuri and his stupid bright clothes, and everyone's like also just thinks this is weird and goofy and strange and weird.
Yeah, it was Bleach being dumb, but in a good dumb way.
Yeah, I mean, like, I was thinking the whole time, I'm like, I know he's wearing that because he thinks it protects him from their, like, teleporting powers or whatever, but, like, nobody's
how
even
to use
used
a shadow
that.
Or something like that.
Yeah, but nobody's even used that to attack anyone. He doesn't need to wear it. I think he's just, like, reveling in his genius, so. And also his, like, assistant girl wasn't wearing hers, which I was let down on that. Why wasn't she? I guess she's not allowed to be shiny like him in public.
I mentioned this in the thread also. Not that it was that important, but I remembered that Nemu is actually like a creation, like a homunculus or something like that.
Oh, really?
She's one of his experiments. Of course, okay. She is.
Yeah, gotcha. And one last thing before we leave off this episode. A quick question: when Kisuke was doing his bit about like. Transporting his plan to transport the good guys up into the sky, what was he going to do? Was he building them like a rocket or like what?
Essentially, yes.
Because it's like
explain
weird.
It in more detail in I don't know if it's the next episode, but like soon enough they'll explain more detail. But it's kind of like an elevator / rocket / kind of weird thing, like mixture of the two. But that's the building contraption to do for bringing back up.
that's what was confusing to me, because they were going a lot about like, oh, learning how the bad guys use teleportation. And I'm like, but we're building a rocket?
I will say, and I don't think this is too much of a spoiler, there is and there does end up being some teleportation later on. But like Ichigo and his crew are in, we'll see, are kind of, again, more using a contraption. And then there's some teleportation going on later in the, I think, the third season that, again, I don't think it's really a spoiler to say that, but other people make it their way back up to the, you know, the Soul King area, or whatever you call Royal Palace or whatever it's called. So
that's it for Bleach. I think it was a fine episode overall. And that's it for this week. We've covered the entire premieres this week. Do we want to nominate anything for the awards?
Play flavor alert.
Potential award nominations.
I don't know if Giselle's name or maybe Giselle herself might be worth nomination. She's a fun character, and she as you can see, she gets to do a lot of fun things. So I don't know if she's worth nominating in some capacity. Maybe not, but I don't know. That's the thought crossed my mind.
We thought about adding her name last week, and we kind of decided against it. We went with Candace Catnip because that was more funny to us.
Fair enough.
I don't know about her character yet. Let's see what she does. Let's wait and see how she ends up dying.
Okay, that's fair. But yeah, she is a fan favorite for a reason. She's definitely one of the more memorable and enjoyable Quincy's. So,
I would say too that let's wait on the. Although I think it's almost a foregone conclusion, let's wait to add the Goma fight until we see the final episode. But I think at this point, it's almost certainly going to be a contender. So,
all right, also fair.
All right. Well, that'll do it, guys. We are going to be back next week, and that'll be a little bit of a longer episode, obviously, because we're going to need to do a review and ranking. So check back then. And then in 2 weeks, we get the premiere of season 2 of Mashal, which I'm looking forward to seeing what that's like.
And then in that split, we'll see season. So,
yeah. Well, we'll get a season finale, but then I'm assuming we're going to just keep getting more Bleach. I mean, that seems likely. So,
yeah, I think we're just rolling into season 3, which makes me curious because, like, once season 3 ends, it's almost certainly going to end before season 4 in Japan starts. So I wonder if they're going to do a rerun or what they're going to do for Zenfield season 4 for Toonami. But I guess those questions for another time.
Yeah, so that'll do it for this episode. Thank you very much for being here, Seda.
Yep, no problem.
And thank you, Crocodile.
My pleasure.
Tune in next week for episode 448. And until then, later. Later.